Last name, counsel.
Cipriora.
Cipriora, okay. Mr. Cipriora, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. As you know, this case involves a matter in which the district court granted summary judgment.
Can I just quickly, before you get into the merits of your argument?
Yes, sir.
I was concerned that there's not a final judgment here. I'm looking at A001 and A002, which is the judgment and the order of judging and decreeing the judgment. There was a counterclaim of invalidity here on three grounds, 102, 103, and 112. And the counterclaim of invalidity, there was a motion for summary judgment on the counterclaim in two respects, one for non-infringement and one for invalidity. The summary judgment of non-infringement was granted. Your side made a motion, it's at number 156 in the docket, for summary judgment in your favor on a whole slew of issues.
Yes.
And you asked for summary judgment in your favor only on the 112 claim. Your summary judgment did not cover 102 and 103. And so I'm puzzled. What is the basis that you feel for saying that the counterclaims on 102 and 103 have been dismissed?
I wasn't aware of an issue. It's never been raised, so I'm not aware of it.
It's a jurisdictional issue.
I understand now.
Those counterclaims are still pending.
I'm not sure of the disposition. The judge obviously tried to clear out the docket.
Well, if you look at A01, I know the judge probably thought he was doing it, but in A01 and 02, you see that as the judge in the whereas clause, which is on page 101, that whereas there's a bunch of stuff pending in front of us, and it says, whereas the recommendation is that all other remaining motions and claims be denied or dismissed as moot for lack of subject and the sum having come before me. And then you look over and see what the actual order is. The whereas clause is describing what was in front of the judge. And the whereas clause says, whereas Whelan's motion for summary partial judgment dismissing LG's affirmative defenses is denied as moot. So it's not that it's dismissed, and first of all, it's referring to the affirmative defenses, not to the counterclaim.
Is it your belief that all the counterclaims have been dismissed from this case and it's in position for review? Or do you believe that there are still pending counterclaims below?
Our understanding was the court had disposed of all pending matters.
If this case went back, if we flip the claim interpretation and whatnot and send it back, there's going to be some more activity, correct?
There'll be a trial.
On
all issues,
okay.
Really.
Now, at the trial, will LG have to refile a complaint raising a counterclaim of invalidity on 102 and 103? If they were dismissed, it would have to refile. And the question is it gone? Or is it just lying dormant in there somewhere, perhaps due to an administrative foul-up?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know this position with respect to that, because I know the intent of the court was to clear this off the docket based on this construction. And as you can see, various orders were issued relating to these various matters. But as to the specific issue of the counterclaims, it was never raised and it's never been an issue among the parties.
I would have thought it would have come to somebody's, I'm not even a patent lawyer, but I mean, look at this. Order to judge the affirmative defenses is denied as moot. And the affirmative defenses was, half of the answer. The other half of the answer were the counterclaims.
Yeah, I don't know that the court ever issued an order on the counterclaims. And I'll look to my colleagues. I'm not aware of any order on the counterclaims specifically.
It's your belief that they were dismissed?
Yeah. I believe that there was dismissal of the entire action. They closed it up on appeal.
Would it be your position that that first sentence that includes the number 3, which says all of the remaining motions and claims be denied or dismissed as moot or for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, should be viewed by this court as sufficient to amount to their dismissal?
Yes.
Even though that's in the whereas clause as opposed to the order?
I think that's as close as the court got, perhaps, the district court.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us your argument on the merits.
About the merits of the case, yes. Thank you, Your Honor. All right, so as I was saying, summary judgment is granted based on two words, informational scheme. And what's remarkable here as a matter of law, there are three things that are remarkable, really extraordinary about this ruling as a matter of law. One, informational scheme is defined in the specification by the inventor. He was his own lexicographer. And yet the district court did not use that definition, came up with his own definition.
If the district court believes he later, through prosecution, disclaimed something such that he's not entitled to that lexicography, then it would be proper, and that seems to be what the court said, whether he's right or not, that seems to be what he said.
True, and what I would get at is they're extraordinary in the sense that if you look at the fact the court didn't come up, did not find another definition anywhere in the specification or file wrapper. There was no other definition to be chosen. The court came up with its own definition, which raises another red flag. First, you ignore the lexicographer's choice. Second, red flag goes up. Second, red flag goes up. The court comes up with its own construction. Often those cases, disclaimer, they'll find a specific other clause, something else specific. Not so here. And third, red flag, which is particularly important.
Well, I thought he used exactly that definition. He just further limited it to said no a priori, no advanced knowledge.
No, he modified it. He added information terms about rating agencies. He altered it to suit what he thought was the intent of the party, of the inventor. He actually changed it from what the inventor said. He added some language about a rating agency, and then he added this thing about no advanced
That's
knowledge.
That's not what you dispute, is it? You don't dispute the language about the rating agency, as I understand it. You dispute the a priori knowledge. Am I wrong?
Well, I would dispute the entire definition. But the point is, when a court does something like that, where did it find it? Was there something specifically stated? In the cases that we know from this court, when there's disclaimer, typically you'll find some specific language that said, here's what you should use instead. What's extraordinary here is the court rejected the specific language, came up with its own that wasn't anywhere else. And by the way, the language the court came up with does not cover some of the embodiments set forth in the specification, which if you look at, for the first time we're seeing, in the red brief, page 28, LG acknowledges that. So where there's smoke, there's fire. There's at least three irregularities here. And ultimately, what you're looking for is to determine whether or not what is the proper construction of those terms, that term informational scheme. The proper construction is the construction provided by the patentee as his own lexicographer. It's set forth as column 5, lines 39 through 43. It is clearly stated, and it works. It actually makes sense. There's no articulation of a problem with it. And so the answer to the question is, what's the proper construction? It's the one that the patentee provided.
It struck me that what the district court was trying to do was to fit in a claim construction here that he thought comported with what the invention was all about.
Exactly. And that's what...
So he's trying to say, look, I'm just trying to deal with what this invention is covering. He's looking at a situation where he's thinking to himself, Wieland is simply arguing that LG is practicing the prior art. That's what LG's doing. And so, well, you can't infringe by practicing the prior art. And so he comes up with a claim construction that makes infringement impossible.
Right. Well, so the court did, and you're exactly right, Your Honor. What the court
is
did...
Is that sort of how you read what the district court was doing?
I'd say yes. I'd say that's part of there. Three things the district court relied on. So we know the standard here is clear and unmistakable disavowal. That's what we're looking for. So we clearly have it framed. There was a definition given. There's no doubt about that. It was given. It's in the spec, column 5, 39 through 43. The court comes up with another construction. In order to do that, there must be something, a contrary definition somewhere in the file wrapper somewhere else, which there's not. No dispute about that. And so what we're talking about here, as Judge Morris said, was there a clear and unmistakable disavowal? The court says there was. What does he rely upon? First, Judge Clevenger, right, he relies on intent. Primarily in the magistrate judge report and recommendation. That's where he looks. And that's the big problem in terms of the first step. The intent of the invention was in part to be able to do this remote alteration or changing of the informational scheme. But it's much more than that. And that's why the language of the claim is broad. The language of the claim, if you go back to Claim 7, is receive and store. It doesn't say and remotely configure. It doesn't do that. If you look at the specification, what's...
Would it be fair if I referred to steps A through D as the receiving and storing portion?
That would be fair, Your Honor. Yes, it would.
And then if I were to refer to, would it be E through I or F through I as the blocking step? Would that be a fair characterization?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say anything controversial, so I'm just...
Yeah, I think that's reasonably fair.
Well, as I understand your argument, it is what occurs in A through E or so, the receiving and storing, doesn't have to be what's used for blocking. Is that right? Am I understanding your argument right?
When you say it doesn't have to be used, the informational scheme that's involved in the blocking is the same. So, for example, if the moving rate MPAA, Movie Association of America rating system, is in place, that same informational scheme will be used for purposes of selecting and blocking. The distinction the district court misses here is that it doesn't require a complete download of the entire informational scheme. The way it's received is received and stored. And if you look at the specification, we've put pages 10 through 12 of our brief, multiple examples of three possibilities. One is a complete change of the informational scheme. So the configuration information comes down, and it's a completely new informational scheme.
But, counsel, as I understand the way this works, and maybe I don't understand it, but as I think I understand it, what's actually being used in the accused devices to do the blocking is not what's being received. It's something that's already pre-programmed.
It's the same informational scheme. When you say it's being used, it's the same information. It just isn't the exact same configuration.
Suppose I have two law clerks. They're identical twins. Mm-hmm. They're not the same person. One of them does a case for me. They may have the same DNA and the same information, but they're not the same person. If they are retrieving information from a pre-programmed separate location, and that's what they're using for blocking, despite the fact that there might be some redundancy where that same information is being sent, that's not the information, the actual information that is being used.
It's a bad analogy. It is the same information. The configuration, first of all, configuration information is what's stored, and it's not the complete informational scheme. It can be part of an information, it can be part, it can be redundant, it can be entirely new. That's the A through D. When it talks about, look at what's downloaded, it's configuration information, not the informational scheme. That's the important distinction here. Configuration information can describe part of an informational scheme, it can describe an entire informational scheme, or it can describe something that's already there. That's what, if you look at, particularly in the patent with respect to the program rating configuration control packs, PRCC, if you look at that particular example where it talks about actually receiving a particular piece of information, think about the configuration information as describing an informational scheme. It may describe an informational scheme that's already present in the unit. It may describe something that's partially different, either amending it or supplementing it, or it may describe something that's completely new. It's received and stored. At that point, the unit, as described in the specification, can do three things. If it's new, it can change on the fly and has a whole new informational scheme. If it's the same, it can just discard it, which is the example given in the patent with respect to the PRCC, as it says here. For example, and this is an example that's given in the specification.
So three things it could do?
It can do three different.
So if it's new, you use it. If it's the same, you discard it. And
if it's partial, you'll use the part that's different. Or supplement. It could be different, changing, or it can be additional. And just, you know, there are multiple examples we give in the briefs about this particular issue, but just as a specific example, which is an embodiment of the invention, they've acknowledged it, is column 24. It starts on 23, it carries to 25. It talks about these PRCC packets, which are designed to impact the configuration information and tell us about the informational scheme. And it says, if apparatus 20 has already received a complete PRCC packet sequence corresponding to that revision code, then it's not necessary for the apparatus to parse the packets being issued because it's already contained.
Then it discards it, right? Isn't that what the LG device does? It discards that information.
It discards, doesn't use, whatever.
Well,
exactly.
But if it discards that information, then how can you say that is the information being used in the blocking step?
The blocking step uses, there's a difference here. It's just the information that's received is configuration information describing. So think of it as a rating system. The rating system is, as you familiar with the movies, the MPAA, PG-17.
Because it describes something that was rejected, the thing that it described and rejected was used.
It's still used, right.
That's your argument.
It's still MPAA. So think about motion.
Used in a metaphorical sense.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly.
Actually not used, because what was actually used was what was embedded in their receiver.
Because we already had the MPAA, for example. So if you go to the movie to see PG-17, that's the rating.
I'm just trying to be... Your answer to the presiding judge, I think, would be, in all honesty, would be to say, well, in one respect, that what was received is not used because it was discarded. But in another, it is used because it's the same information.
Yeah. And there's no requirement that A through D, that the information actually be used specifically. It doesn't say it's being used. That's the point. That's one of the distinctions that the court seemed to miss. It says you have to be using that.
Well, no, but it's not in A through E that it says it, but isn't it in E through I, where it's referring to said category information, said information scheme.
Right.
Well, said means it has to be the one it talked about earlier, which is the one that was received in store.
Yeah, the thing being described, for example, go to the movie theater. MPAA is the one we're very familiar with, PG-17, right? Your kids go to a movie, MPAA-17, all right? That's the informational scheme, okay? So that's embedded in the unit. It's already there. We already know what the user selections are. Configuration comes down. It describes, let's say it describes MPAA, okay? unit goes and looks and says, we've already got MPA with us. We don't need any of that configuration information. We can make the determination because you've told us it's MPAA. We've already got it. In that case, it would discard the configuration information, would not be necessary, not be used. Just look at it, receive it and store it, and then use the MPA rating that's already there.
But it doesn't actually receive it and store it. It receives it and discards it.
No, it absolutely stores it. It goes into memory, and then, as described in the patent, and then it may not be used, just as this example gave.
Well, no, but it's not just that it isn't used. It's discarded, and they use something else they already have in memory.
Well, there's no requirement that what's received and stored be specifically used to do this.
But it says said information scheme. It has to be the one received and stored,
yeah.
Not a different one that you already have.
That information scheme is being used. It's being described. The earlier information is not the information scheme. Very clear. A through D is not the information.
This is where I think your problem with the district court on claim construction may be well heated. Maybe he shouldn't have defined information scheme the way he did, but isn't it sort of unnecessary because it's the rest of the claim that actually lays out quite clearly that a priori pre-programmed information is what can't be used. So the whole claim requires that. What's received and stored has to be what's used for blocking. And that's really where all of this, what he referred to as disclaimer, but really is repeated distinctions of the prior art based on a priori knowledge of pre-programmed machines comes into play.
Well,
maybe it's not specific disclaimer to information scheme as a term, but it's a description of what your claim is covering.
Well, that's the point. As Judge Clevenger said, it only describes one possibility. It's limiting. The prior art was limited to it must use pre-programmed information. And the flexibility, Professor Collins, that's what the whole language is. It's must. You must
do
use.
Do we actually know in LG's device what happens to the information describing this information scheme when it gets into the receiver? I mean, you say it comes in. It obviously comes in because it's part of the transmitted signal. And where does it go? Do we know?
The court found that with infringement, but for this particular interpretation, we know that it comes in, it's received, and it's stored. And then because it's the same, it's going to be RRT1, it's going to be the same as what's already embedded, it'll be discarded. It just won't be used.
Discard?
Written over, not used. But it will look at it. It will come in and evaluate what it is.
Because there's no way for the receiver to send it someplace. It gets swallowed inside. Right?
No. And that's the point. This is one. So, again, the three examples we give, and the specification is totally consistent with it. What was being distinguished in the file wrapper and the summary of the invention was a system that could only have pre-programmed information. It couldn't change on the fly, and it couldn't do two informational schemes. The thing we're focusing on here is change on the fly. Change on the fly means if there's a different information scheme, in other words, it's not the one that's pre-programmed. It can be received and stored, and then it can be changed. And that's possible as a result of this invention. That's what this is claiming. The court below interprets to say, well, it's
I think your point has been that if LG wanted to, it can flick a switch. It can change its wiring and its device to take full advantage of your invention if it wants to.
Well, no, it actually does it. It actually does it. When it receives and stores it, if it were to find RT5 or change, it would do that. I mean, the point is, the requirement is not that it actually make the change. It requires that it receive and store, and then it does the comparison. And it does all those steps. It receives and stores. The point they're trying to make is they're trying to graft into here saying, well, it also has to remove. It has to actually take out what's there and put in the new thing. As the court, as Judge Moore is saying, you've got to take that configuration information for a new informational scheme. Well, first of all, the configuration information is not the informational scheme. It's very clear. It says it's at least a category and some levels. It's describing an informational scheme. If it happens to be describing one that's already pre-wired, they don't need to use it. If it describes something that's partially different, only the part that's partially different will be used, and therefore the system can adjust on the fly. You don't have to take it back and rewire it.
Counsel, you are way over your time. We will restore a few minutes of rebuttal time, but I think we ought to let Mr. Harris have a turn.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the court, in arriving at the actual construction that stays true to the claim language and aligns with the patent's description of the invention, Wi-LAN is asking this court to ignore five huge issues, five quantum leaps that they want the court to take. Number one, they want to have the court ignore the disavowal. And in this particular case, Your Honor, Judge, you raised the issue as to did the court rely on purpose to condition the claim construction. In reality, the definition that Mr. Scipiora referred to was posed in 1996 when they filed the application. That application was co-pending with the parent application, and during the prosecution in 1998, 2 years later, disavow after disavow, six separate representations in the 030 application as well as information in the spec of the 091 application specifically said this is to be used instead of, this has nothing to do, this is the exact antithesis of where something is pre-programmed. That's in the prior art. The court did not merely look at the purpose and the intent and the mere summary of the invention as to what was attempting to be accomplished there. That's item one. The avow is clear, it's distinct, it's repeated.
Where is the disavow? Show me what page and what precise language you think is a clear and unmistakable disavow that pertains to the words information scheme.
Okay, if you look right off the bat at appendix page 3373, I believe, it's column 2. There's a reference in there in the 402 patent itself.
Which page are you referring to?
Yes, it's
3373.
I believe it's column 2.
Of the patent?
Yes.
Okay.
If you look under summary of the invention, it says the prior art blocking systems include devices which must be constructed or initially programmed with advanced knowledge of the coding scheme. The advanced knowledge, I'm sorry, this is at lines 12 through 23. And this is the 402 patent, not the parent application. It mentions that the prior art blocking systems include devices which must be constructed or initially programmed with advanced knowledge of the coding scheme. Talking about the prior art. He continues, the advanced knowledge must include what codes are used in the coding scheme and embedded in the incoming video signal and should also include the meanings of those codes. Then, in the same patent, in column 12, the inventor very clearly...
realize that that's just a description of the prior art.
Of the prior art, that's correct.
That in and of itself is certainly not the claim.
Agreed, Your Honor. But when you get to paragraph, column 12, rather, the inventor says, if all programming were described...
Where are you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Column 12?
Line 55 through 61.
Yeah, all programming is described.
And again, 66 through column 13, line 6. Look what he goes on to say. If all programming were described everywhere according to a universal informational scheme, which, Your Honors, is exactly what we have right now in the U.S. That's how it's done. Which never changed, which is what we have in the U.S., then apparatus 20 could be pre-programmed to recognize all of the types of information about video signal 24 in that universal scheme. He goes on to say at line 67, consequently, the invention provides a method in apparatus to remotely configure apparatus to accommodate new schemes for selecting and transmitting information about video signal 24 that may be introduced to augment or replace existing schemes. That makes it unnecessary to physically alter apparatus 20 if new informational scheme is adopted. That's for starters in the 402.
Which is the purpose of the invention.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's why I said what I said when your adversary was.
But at the same time that this is being prosecuted.
Oh, but how is that? How is saying, consequently, the invention provides a method and apparatus to remotely change and accommodate new schemes, the same thing as saying, therefore, my extension doesn't include to anything that has any pre-programmed information that it uses? Saying something includes one thing is not the same thing as saying it excludes something else.
Understood, Your Honor. And that's why...
clear and unmistakable disclaimer is something that we've taken very seriously here at the court.
I understand, Your Honor. But at the same time... that the same terms are being prosecuted in the 030 application. If the court refers to appendix pages 780, 794, 795, 796, 798, and 804, I've got six different occurrences where the applicant
pick
states...
Pick your best one.
Okay, how about a couple? I'll pick a couple good ones. Each of the cited
are we
references...
in the same patent now, 402?
This is not the 402. This is the co-pending parent application, the 030 application. It never issued. It was rejected.
Which specification are we in now?
We're in
the ones you're going to give us to right now.
Yeah, we're at appendix 793, 794, 795, 796. I'll just pick two.
Now, this is not an appendix. This is office actions and responses, correct?
Yeah.
This is not a specification.
This is the prosecution history. Okay. This is in response to an office action. All right?
What page are you on?
793, you said?
793 and 794. And I got some buttes for you, Judge. We've got each of the cited references shows a video blocking system in which a blocking device is constructed with a priori knowledge of the rating system, the rating scheme to be used. The West system, that's one of the prior references, is apparently...
You've just jumped. That's not the next sentence. Where are you now?
No, I'm on the next page, 794. I'm sorry.
You're taking one sentence from one page and then one sentence from another.
That's true, because what he's doing at this point is distinguishing each of the prior art references.
Right.
He starts with a general comment that all of them require initial existing knowledge of the rating scheme. Then at 794, he goes to the West system. At 794, and says West system is apparently programmed with advanced knowledge of all readings.
I can't find what you're reading on 794. Well, it doesn't say so. So it doesn't say the West system. Oh, there it does.
It does.
Okay, there it is.
It's apparently programmed with advanced knowledge of all readings.
Right. The West system is apparently, and these are quotes, programmed with advanced knowledge of all rating schemes which might be applied to programming in the received signal. On the same page, they go to the ELAM prior art apparatus, which is and says it is clear that the ELAM apparatus is constructed with advanced knowledge of the rating scheme to be applied, unquote, at the same page. At 795, the next page,
those LG devices are practicing the prior art.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's precisely. And there are two or three additional locations at page 798, for example, in distinguishing the art. And again, I don't have a line number, but it's at 798. The information transmitted and received by the cited references merely specifies the rating being applied to video programs according to a predetermined scheme known a priori to both the transmitter and the receiver. In all of the cited references...
Well, all that's true, that the prior art teaches that the devices are already hardwired, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what would happen if the district court had looked at this a little differently and said, well, this informational scheme, information describing the informational scheme, instead of saying that it can't include information that the device already knows, said it has to include something the device doesn't know. The purpose of the invention was to say here that there would be a way to allow the hardwired device to make adjustments, if you will. And it's not going to make adjustments of what it already knows. It's going to make adjustments to something new or different.
That's correct, Your Honor. And by the way, Your Honor, just for everyone's information, the RRT1 signal...
Would you object to a definition that said, instead of saying the way he did, that the informational scheme has to exclude... what's already known is to say it's indifferent to what's already known. It has to include something that's new.
Your Honor, I believe that we arrive at the same point with that analysis. And here's why.
Well, his information system's he says could transmit something that's new.
Why Land is suggesting that RRT1 that is broadcast in some locations in the U.S. but not all. Is somehow received by the machine, and it's that purported same exact information that's used. That's not the case. RRT1 is incapable of configuring a V-chip analysis because the CEA-766 data is missing from RRT1. In other words, what's pre-programmed in the LG units has what is in RRT1 and a whole bunch more. So it's not receiving the exact signal.
Let me make sure I understand you. Are you saying that what... you are not using anything except pre-programmed information for blocking purposes.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What about their FCC argument? You know, they have in their brief, in the gray brief at 23 and 24 or 25 thereabouts, they make an argument and they say that if this what you're saying is true, then LG's accused products would not be able to respond to changes in the content advisory rating system as required by FCC regulations.
Okay. FCC regulations require that if and when another signal is ever broadcast, that newer sets have the capability or at least consider the opportunity to get another new transmission. But that's only one of two required transmissions, Your Honor. So in essence, as things stand right now, what LG sets have are pre-programmed, hardwired RRT1 Plus CEA766 information. That's not what RRT1 broadcasts. It's hardwired. It's not even receiving the first transmitted signal on the TV channel. There's the other signal that could possibly ever be considered has never been broadcast in this country. It hasn't been. And accordingly, the method, which is very, very important, and Your Honor mentioned, hey, in looking at the importance of elements A through D, you have to receive from a transmission, a television transmission, a first configuration information that defines, the data defines an information scheme. You've got to receive a second one. Your Honor, we're not even receiving and using a first one in this case. All we're using is the hardwired prior art version that we've got. And that's the second point of the leaps that Wiland is asking you to make. It ignores the fact also that at one point we see in the briefing that A through D now, and the court has brought up the fact that the word said appears over and over and over again with regard to those first and second information schemes in elements E through I, and yet we're told in the briefing that elements A through D may not even be necessary. Now you may not even have to receive a transmission to enable this configuring on the fly. That doesn't make sense. You can't use E through I that refers over and over and over again to these informational schemes if you're not receiving them, storing them, and using them for the purpose for which they're intended, which is to configure the receiver. LG's receivers do not get configured by any signals received on any television band at all. It's all pre-wired. So whether the court looks at claim construction as an issue, did the court appropriately use the disclaimers of the sister application, the parent application rather, or are elements, even after construction, are there elements
what
missing?
What would happen? Let's assume the rating change system changes. Let's assume there's a quadruple X rating that's added for really dirty stuff for movies. And so a movie's coming through on a, you know, on a cable channel late at night, and it's carrying triple X rating. But let's assume your machines are only wired for double X. What happens?
Well, it depends. If it's coming in on a separate channel, if it's coming in on a separate signal, and it's got to accompany the programming, it can't be something that gets hardwired in.
I'm dealing with a situation where a new rating system.
If a new rating system comes in, then what we found is we've got the first informational scheme. We're still missing the second broadcast informational scheme.
Forget, let's assume they send two.
Two completely separate informational schemes?
Let's assume for Canada. I mean, they're trying to broadcast for up in Buffalo. And so they say, well, guess what? We've got a new triple X rating in the United States and a quadruple X rating in both countries, and we want to transmit that to all our friends over in Ottawa and everybody down in Buffalo. And so this movie comes through, and it's got a quad X rating on it, and your machine only knows about 3X. I said, I do not want my children watching any 3X movies, so I've taken your device and I've programmed to kick all 3X out, and a 4X movie shows up. What happens?
Your Honor, what would happen is our machine, the LG machine, has the pre-programmed chip. It's got, you know, all that stuff that's hardwired. It would be able to receive, should it ever be generated, and to date it hasn't, it would be able to receive one channel carrying frequency.
Well, that's your one channel. That's your one channel, two channel argument that you say if you had to go back here, you're going to win on the one channel, two.
But it could only receive one. It can't. The sets are not configured. They're not arranged to be able to receive the two that are required.
But it is configured to receive the one.
The one.
So what you're telling me is that if our situation works, assuming that, you know, forget about the two signals on the one, if they transmit something that's new, it's going to get through and work. And it's going to be received, stored, and my viewer can say, oh, well, I want to get rid of quad X, I get rid of quad X, and it'll cancel it, right?
Well, in essence, yeah, there would be a blocking function, but it would only be through the utilization of one signal, one frequency. The LG machine only has the ability, should it ever be generated, to receive one.
I'm trying to get at the claim construction, not at whether or not there's an absence of an infringement because there's only one set of information being passed instead of two. I'm still trying pushing with trying to have you help both your sides help us to decide whether or not this claim construction in the face of a clear definition in the statute, I mean in the spec, because the inventor said, by this, I mean this. And our rules, you know, we play by the rules, right? We've got to have something pretty big to overcome that.
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't believe that the claim construction that the lower court reached stated that if there's a pre-wired, a pre-programmed section on the set, it forecloses, it precludes ever being able to receive the two separate informational configuration schemes that are going to come in ever again. There's no suggestion at all that simply because it has a hardwired portion, it could never, ever in the future be directed. But to do it, it's got to be able to receive two, the two elements of A and C.
I saw that argument in your brief.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. Do you have one closing sentence that you wanted to?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a quick mention that purportedly Judge Kaplan found infringement if the claim construction on information scheme was somehow changed. That is not there was an inadvertent mention of the fact that as the court noted,
the judge made an inadvertent mention or somebody else.
The judge didn't realize that there were another seven motions for summary judgment pending where other terms of the claim.
So what he was saying was on this particular limitation,
on this particular
that's
thing,
all there was in the whole patent.
That's all there was
and
in the record.
And you don't disagree with that?
Well, we disagree that there would be a
that
possibility for infringement.
Case.
I mean, there's seven other claims.
But on that specific limitation on that interpretation.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily mean infringement. That's all we were getting at. There were some other representations made, but I believe the briefing and the I believe the court is well advised.
Well, there was some confusion about whether or not you got rid of the counterclaims too. I mean, just as a little lecture to you, you know, we took that very Nystrom against Trex, you know that case. We took this very, very seriously. In fact, as I told my colleagues, one day Judge Mayer was presiding and somebody came in and said, well, you're right, we didn't get rid of our counterclaims. He got up and walked off the bench. He said, I don't have any jurisdiction to hear you.
Your Honor,
you do these district court judges a favor if you're real careful to clean up your record to get rid of the counterclaims.
Understood, Your Honor. And for the record, Your Honor, we agree with Mr. Scipiora. All the other claims, including those counterclaims that weren't specifically mentioned, we understood those to be dismissed as moot until we go back and face
the. Well, if the case goes back, you refile. You know, don't let me learn later on that you told the judge you didn't have to refile because they just have been parked.
We're hoping that we don't get to that stage, Your Honor, with all due respect.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Why don't we give 2 minutes of rebuttal since you've exhausted your time.
Right, thank you, Your Honor. The point of the appeal here is to whether there was a disclaimer. There wasn't a disclaimer, and you've hit upon it on target. There is no disclaimer to the issue, and it's not there. You didn't hear it, and it's not there. And the law says the disclaimer has to be clear. So there's no question that the claim construction of the district court hinged on this term, brought in his own term, ignored the existing term.
What do you do with the references in the file history that your advertisers point to? Let's get over this disclaimer and no disclaimer, because you know, we all know how to use words. We can say, well, we find a disclaimer, you know, here, there, and the other place. So your adversary's pointed to 6-7 places in the file history where he's saying, you know, you saw what he said.
Yeah, I do.
And why isn't that important?
We embrace them all, just as we do the summary invention. In every instance, the inventor was distinguishing the prior art, which was limited to a system that had to have the information prefigured in the actual device, which meant that if the system changed, if the signal changed.
For some people, it means I'm not trying to write a claim that covers a system where everything is baked in.
No, but it's just the opposite. I mean, it's very clear that the inventor, the portion he read, just as an example, the portion he read and he said, consequently, invention provides a method. This is column 12. It's important here on line 67 or so. Consequently, invention provides a method and apparatus to remotely configure apparatus 20 to accommodate new schemes for selecting and transmitting information.
I'm talking about what's in the file history.
Okay. But
yes, I understand his main disclaimer argument to come out of the file history.
Yes, and it's the same as the patent itself. The patent he was distinguishing prior art. The prior art was limited to situations where...
When you distinguish prior art, you're saying, please get it clear. I'm not trying to claim prior art.
I have a system that's not limited to only having information prefigured. It can be prefigured. It can be completely new or it can be partially changed. That's the part I was going to read.
No. You can't say they have pre-configured, but my claim's not like them because mine covers pre-configured, some new, some pre... That would fall within the claim still. If your claim is broad enough to cover only pre-programmed information, then you fall squarely within the prior art.
No, the question is what you can do with it. See, the element here...
It's a method claim. It's not what you can do with it. It's what do you do.
What you do with it.
It's a method claim, not an apparatus claim.
Correct. And A through D of the claim sets forth what happens is you receive, you store, and then as they do in this case, they look to see whether or not it's different. If it is different, as he just acknowledged, they can change. They don't have to rely on the pre-programmed information.
But there's no evidence that they ever change. Only if they were to change and use the new information are you going to have them using something that isn't pre-programmed. And there's no evidence of record that that's being done.
That's nowhere in the claims, Your Honor. What you just said is nowhere in the claims. If you look at A through D, all it requires receiving and storing. And looking at user preferences, that's all that's required.
And
exactly
what
they do. And it
says blocking using said categories, said information scheme.
If it's required to do so, if it's called upon to do so, if the information changes.
Blocking is blocking. It's not if it's called upon to block. I mean, that's the point of the claim. If you don't block, you don't have infringement.
No, the claim H&I says block or not block. Those are both actions. You look at limitation H-I, if in certain circumstances, if the information is such that the user preferences say block, it blocks. If the user preferences say, don't block, it passes through. Those are both methods. They're part of the step. That's what actually happens. In the LG system, it's not the prior art. They actually can get a new system, as he's described. He's arguing about the two informational scheme. We'll fight about that later. But if an informational scheme comes through that's different, they can look at it, they receive it, and they store it, and they can change what they have, and they can block based on the new informational scheme. That's exactly what this invention is about.
They can do it. They can do it. This is a method claim. There's no evidence of record that it is being done, and so therefore you haven't established infringement.
Well, the method is only the method is receive. Look at the language of A through D is receive, store, and then evaluate. At that point, you have the selection, the user preferences selected, all right, and then there's analysis done at that point.
Well, you know, that really then turns it all on what the meaning of stored is, which we haven't spent much time on. Because if you said stored, from his perspective, what stored means. Your LGs for a second. Stores means put someplace to be used later. That's the purpose of storing it.
Well,
and you say storing simply means it came in and sat someplace.
No. They actually look at the information and they see whether it's new. They look at the information. It's RT1. It's the same. We don't need to do anything with it. There's actually, in their device, they actually do this invention. If it just came in and they didn't do anything with it, then that would be a good argument. But they actually look at it. And if it was art, as they say, depending on what it is, they'll make an adjustment.
Well, but they say he thinks storing means lodging it there in order to use it in the future, and you wouldn't use it in the future if it's already there in hardware.
Well, we have an argument store, but the notion here is for the purposes of this claim and this language, the issue is whether or not when it comes in, it actually happens. What they're saying is, oh, it's within the prior art. All that ever happens is that hardware information is used. That's not true. The method says, is it received and stored? And when it's received and stored, at that point in time, an evaluation is done in the software, and they look to see whether it's different than what's there. Or if it's, for example, if it's RT5, they would then do exactly what's going on here. But the method doesn't require them to actually do something specifically in terms of swapping out. It says, look and evaluate, receive and store.
I think we have your argument. You want to conclude with a final thought, or you think we've got it down?
I think the only thing I'd add is, I mean, in the specification, there are a number of instances. The key thing here is the disclaimer. And the part that he read on page 12, it actually talks about if it was limited to only things that didn't have prior information, augmentation wouldn't be an issue, right? You couldn't be augmenting something if you were going to rely on something that was already there, according to claims construction.
Okay.
And if you look at column 13, it specifically says...
Okay, counsel, I think you're going too far at this point.
You've exhausted
your time, plus
right.
4 minutes, plus the two I gave you for free, so we got to call it quits.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for their arguments and very helpful to the court.
Thank you.
Last case, which was really our second case, is 2012-5072, Diaz.